I have no idea. You want me to try to make this show better? That's a $2,500 marketing stunt. So I don't know if you know, but I make portable bars for a living.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Today I'm talking to another podcaster who has been making his way into my iPad mini, one of the very few podcasts that I listen to every single week. Welcome to the show, Dan Andrews from Lifestyle Business Podcast.
Thank you, James.
Thought it would be good to catch up because we've been crossing paths a little bit lately. We both have podcasts. We're both doing our own thing with out there creating communities and content. So we have a lot of things in common. And I thought it'd be good to just catch up and talk about, at this time of the year, some of the things that we're doing for next year and some of the things that are influencing our business. I thought it'd be a great discussion for our listeners to catch up with. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Might just start off by just doing a little bit of an introduction. I'm sure that many of my listeners have picked up on my Facebook alerts and tweets that I'm following the Lifestyle Business Podcast show. But if you could just give us a little bit of background on that, so that just in case any listeners aren't already listening to it, it's on my high recommendation list. Tell us all about it.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for that, by the way. That's obviously very flattering and it worked. So let's put it out in the open. I did join your Silver Circle and I'm because I wanted to learn from you and I found you via CVA podcast. So while we do any, before we get started with any kind of podcast marketing evangelism, there's proof in the pudding right there. So anyway, thank you again for having me on the show. But so the Lifestyle Business Podcast started, I started my entrepreneurial journey in 2007, being inspired by stuff like the 4-hour work week and started traveling while I was running my business. And at the time, I was the only really guy I could find on the internet that was traveling and having a traditional hard goods business with a warehouse and a sales staff and everything like that. So I just started putting out a podcast talking about it. And that was in late 2009. And I really could not have predicted sort of what happened. We put ourselves on a schedule, started putting out shows every week. And over a million downloads later, we have an amazing community of passionate entrepreneurs who are interested in growing great businesses and traveling while they do it.
Well, tell me about your co-host on that too.
Yes. No mention of the show would be warranted without bringing up Ian, my best friend and business partner. So we do everything 50-50, including the podcast.
Now, each episode, you have some comedic introduction of Ian. Who comes up with that stuff?
That's me. And, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, how do you come up with the content? How do you come up with the content? It's really simple if you have a super clear structure. And I call it creativity through structure, forcing yourself through a really tight funnel. And there's really only 8 parts of the show, and they're super elemental. And so I just have to come up with a simple little joke every week, and I've got 7 days to do it. So it's not really that hard as long as I know for 7 days that I need to do that. Same deal goes for the quick tip at the end. I need to find one interesting thing, and I might even pick that up by following you on Facebook or with the meat and potatoes. It's a list of 5 items every week. So I only need to think of one interesting list of 5 items every week. So I think as a third party, it might initially look complex and difficult. But when you look behind the scenes and look at the creative process, it's actually very simple to create.
Right. I call these frameworks, and they've been powering my business. In the beginning, I didn't even know that I had them, but I just made them habit. But lately, I've been pulling out this reminders app on my Mac, which synchronizes with the iPad and the iPhone. So wherever I am, I can just add a new framework. I actually have a codec. This sounds kind of geeky, but I put F, then a space, and then a hyphen, and then the name of the framework. So at the moment, I've got a framework I'm looking at called interviews. And that means if I'm going to interview someone or have a chat with someone, I can pull out the framework, and it's just got the basic stuff like, you know, tell me your biggest challenge, or what does next year look like for you, or you know, put a plug for your show. So I've got a framework that is a checklist, the same way that a pilot would run an airplane, the same way that a doctor would be managing a hospital. if you have checklists to fall back on, then you can actually free up and focus on that creative stuff. Can you tell us what the 8 points are? Because I love about your show, I like the little pre-intro where you take something from within the show and put it before the bumper. And I like the little music transitions and stuff. I've been meaning to ask you how that comes together, but you've explained that there is actually a template.
Yes. So this is fascinating because I've been making sort of a Sam Carpenter and James Schramko cocktail in my own life. And I don't know why I've resisted doing things like you're talking about, like these frameworks. They make so much sense. I think part of me really resisted them because I thought they might have been cheesy or overwrought. And but then I realized that some of the most successful parts of my business rely on this stuff. And just the other week, we had a problem where, you know, the biggest part about podcast audio is ensuring that the native recording is quality. And we were really letting our editor down by giving him crappy quality audio every week. And so now Ian and I have a 6-point checklist, like a pilot, before we start a podcast. And we actually walk through it in earnest. And I don't know, maybe a year ago I would have thought that was cheesy, but now I'm you know, listening to guys like you and reading Sam Carpenter and thinking, no, I'm going to work the system. This is a system that has been proven to deliver value to people. I'm not going to screw it up with my momentary lapse of good judgment. So, you know, just as an example, before we get on our podcast, we say, flip on a test audio. Are the audio levels between 0.5 and 0.7? If you don't talk, is the audio level completely flat? And we do confirmations back and forth, like pilot, co-pilot. In terms of the show notes, it's a shared document with my team. It's developed over the course of every week, and it's really simple. There's an intro, there's a title, there's a joke, there's a tease if you stick around to the end of the episode. There's a news section, an iTunes shouts, a shouts around the web, questions from users. So you can see if you just put one piece of content under each structural piece, you can really start to build out a pretty robust show. Then we have a meat and potatoes, which every week is a 5-point list. Then we move on to just the tips, and we outro to music. And that's really it. So that's a pretty simple list to fill out, given that we have 7 days to do it.
Are you allowed to use that sample music from an artist in like a little grab of it? Do you get in trouble for that?
So fair use says that you can't directly profit from the usage of somebody else's copyrighted music. So my interpretation of the rule is if you mention the artist and use it to reference the artist, then it's fine. But if you were to use an artist's work every single week as a critical element of your show, then it would be copyright infringement. I'm not a lawyer, by the way.
Love it. Yeah, see, I don't listen to your show just for that piece of music, but it does add a huge amount of value. For me, it's a little window into your personality. What sort of music do you like? And I've started adding a little piece of music to the back end of my videos each week with B-roll. I've been out roaming around my property here with my camera shooting B-rolls because I want to make it more interesting for my listener. And I've directly taken that inspiration from your podcast because I think that's what makes your podcast good. Aside from the fact that we seem to have a great alignment in values and a tremendously aligned business philosophy, which I'd love to dive into around this whole affiliate authority marketing thing, that the transition I've been going through lately. And in part, it's your community that have influenced me a little bit there through some of the crossover people that we've had that have come across and sort of joined us up. Mm-hmm. So to speak, it's the actual scenario. And I do want to talk more about podcasts. One thing you said before is it works. So you've joined Silver Circle, I guess, because you must have discovered me through one of my podcasts.
Yes, Freedom Ocean. I spent a week binging on Freedom Ocean, a quiet writing week in Vietnam. It's just a magical thing, you know, to be able to have a week by myself in Vietnam and to have a great book and then to have found this new podcast and to walk around and you don't even know it, but I'm learning a lot from you and I'm getting used to making value out of the kinds of knowledge that you have. And so I'm pre-trained by the time that I get to talk to you on the phone or get to engage with some of your products. And I think that's pretty magical. One quick thing I want to say too about a topic you mentioned earlier, which is adding some of your personality through the content. I think there's an important amateur pro distinction. Amateur content generators tend to indulge their content with their personal quirks. So they'll take time in their show to kind of talk about irrelevant personal issues before they've earned that trust or attention. And I think it's much more of a pro move to actually be delivering value that's sort of colored by your tastes rather than taking people's attention to display them your tastes. Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah, it's a good distinction. And if anything, I've often been thought of as being too dry or direct or just completely business focused. And as I've sort of put a little bit more personality into my material, I've been getting this huge response. Well, probably the most notable was when I was traveling Europe, and I started putting in outtakes.
I know already. I know already. You shoved the thing in your mouth. Yes. And this is so important. The chocolate waffle. It's hilarious. But I think this is a big thing that people miss is that guys like me, I'm wholly focused on growing my business and improving my life. I don't give a crap about the news. I don't give a crap about reality TV. Like all these traditional entertainment outlets, I'm done with. And so in many ways, like although tension is getting scarcer, there's still not enough good entertainment, engaging content for me. And I think that's a huge opportunity for individual publishers. And that's the opportunity represented by podcasting. So yes, I do know about the entertaining content that you're putting out because I'm waiting for more of it.
Another one was the lack of a tripod or any sort of professional equipment. So most part, the videos were being shot by a 10-year-old kid holding my iPhone or a 12-year-old or the 15-year-old or my wife. So I had a varying crew. And sometimes they literally couldn't hold the thing for that 5-minute shot, and and then they're lowering it in a fits of laughter, and I still included the outtakes in because I just thought it was hilarious. In fact, there was this one bit where I said, "Whatever you keep focusing on, that's what you get." As my daughter is saying, "I can't hold this any longer," and it's literally falling to the ground. But when I introduced that, I didn't say anything about it, but people started commenting saying, "I love the outtakes." And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. So, you know, in the case of me where I can be quite business-minded, it's okay to bring that personality back in. The most popular episode by far was the Ferrari museum visit. That resonated a lot with people. And I think to me, again, it was like we've tapped into some other brand's emotion. They do such a good at emotional selling, the Ferrari brand. When you combine that with your own show, it just took on Facebook with that particular piece.
Yes, I mean there's two critical elements here. Number one is with the Ferrari piece. The moment you said that, I immediately thought that's the traffic piggyback technique, and I love this idea of basically poaching traffic from other sources. And this is in particular useful for timely topics. The two biggest blog posts I've ever written were from poached traffic. I basically did ripoff versions of viral articles and leveraged the fact that people were already asking for that kind of content. People already want Ferrari content. You know, they're asking for that. So if you can find a way to dovetail your content into that, that's a traffic piggyback. And I think another way to look at these outtakes issues, and I was thinking, while we were talking, like there needs to be a Shramco behind the mic show, is that these outtakes are actually narrative elements. And there's a sort of a hidden value to podcasting that people don't talk about a lot, which is giving people vision, giving people ideas of what to do. Your recent thread in Silver Circle, Fly on the Wall. I don't know if I can reveal the insider goodies, but being able to watch the way you think and how you make decisions and how you go through life is really useful, actually. More so than you just coming with a silver tray and giving me all this information. I actually like to watch how you operate. And I think by offering some narrative elements in your content, you can give people an idea and a story to follow.
Yeah, well, that one doesn't feel so self-indulgent. And that is because I was literally sitting next to Brent at a conference on the weekend. And he said, you know, like Steve-O and I, we often talk about what you do just when you don't think anyone's watching. He watched me build a slide deck that I was presenting on the next day, and I put it together. in, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 minutes from scratch with a framework. Again, I've got a simple framework. I drew out on one piece of paper a grid, and I covered it with the format, you know, why, what, how, what, if. I had my introduction, my three or four main points, and then my summary. And I tied the summary at the result into the introduction, and I created, and then I presented it. And then post-event, I've leveraged it, turned it into a bonus and its own product.
Nice.
So he then suggested, you know, start this fly on the wall. So when I'm posting about crap that I do, you know, like I was out there on the weekend filming with a 60 frames per second camera, me shooting a stuffed teddy bear with my archery kit. when I'm sharing that, you know, personal behind the scenes, what I'm up to thing, then I don't feel bad because he actually asked for it. So it's a customer driven request. And I actually feel amazingly cathartic about just sharing that stuff. And if it is of use to someone, well, great, but it's actually quite nice journaling. And I imagine you're probably the journaling type.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this is fascinating though. I mean, I think it would be interesting. I mean, if this podcast sometimes, I mean, I wonder why you're interviewing people and they're not interviewing you. You know, I think you have this black box of interest and intrigue around you. People want to figure out what makes you tick. And I think that's what's so interesting about that forum post, which I think is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I wouldn't have thought to ask for it. It might have been a ridiculous request, but now that I see it, I love it. And one of the things that I've noticed, a success trait that I've pulled out from watching you, and I've seen a lot of people that are successful, is that you seem to have a very low friction point for getting into tasks. Like it's almost a habit for you to make it as simple as possible to get started. Like the way that you do email or forum responses, for example, you treat it almost like an instant messenger. So it's like, it's not this big deal. It becomes something that you can get into very easily and then create more results for yourself and for your customers. So that's just one secret sauce I could share with the audience. Yeah. Behind the mic.
Yeah. That's an interesting distinction because I do. Like I just had a look yesterday. I've posted nearly 5,000 posts in my Fast Web Formula forum.
That's absurd. Yes.
Since it started in, I started in January, but I think I opened it up in March. So that's in a 9-month period. And in my old forum, I did about 10,000 posts over 4 years. Silver Circle's got a lot, but I do have this flash instantaneous method. I even registered a domain once, which I called Snap Worker. But from my general management days, I'd literally had a front and a back door to my office. The back door to the office went to the keyboard for all the cars in the dealership, and the front door was to the sales floor. And I had 21 salespeople, 4 managers, and a couple of valuers in my team. And they would walk through my office all day to the point where in a brand new office, the carpet wore out within a matter of months. So I had that many interruptions into my office that I became really good at micro tasks, or, you know, micro focused bursts of instant decisions. And it's the same methodology I use to keep my inbox down to nothing. I can deal with emails instantly with a short, quick, direct response. And I think it is a habit. And another little mental trick that I have, if someone does ask me something, I know if I have to do it a few times or if I have to come back to it, it does actually build in size and it does start to get annoying on your conscience. So I keep having this echo of something my father would say. It's something around just do it right the first time. Like if you take off your clothes and they have to go to the laundry, I can walk past the pile of clothes, go downstairs and come back up and, you know, it can keep being there annoying me, or I just pick it up the very first time, take it straight to where it needs to go and it's done and there's no more energy expended on it. So sometimes just doing it right now is the shortest possible path that's going to use the least energy, but that does amazing things for your capacity. It can really increase your ability to get to stuff. I was literally sitting at my computer an hour or so ago, and I'd cleared my inbox and posted to all my forums, and I had nothing else to do except go and create content. That's why I contacted you and said, hey, I'm ready a little bit early if you want. I have nothing else. Today, the only appointment I had was to talk to you, and that is it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I agree, man. It's, you know, it's at the end of the day, one way to look at business is just getting an incredible amount of things done through any means possible, whether that's personal productivity, hiring, any point of leverage you can find. And in particular, when it comes to your expertise, you know, having as much capacity as possible is really critical. So I really look for stuff like that and try to, you know, change my mindset. I was just last week, I was about 4 weeks ago, I kind of hit a point where I needed to reevaluate my inbox tactics. And it's funny how it works. It's just a mindset shift. Like, you know, there's just a whole new set of kinds of emails in my inbox that get a different sort of consideration now, based on the kind of volume that I'm seeing. So it's really all about mindset. Mindset can have an incredible impact on capacity. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's the mindset that drives that system, and then the system can take care of it. So let's loop back onto that other topic. You were concerned that having structure would reduce your creativity, and I think that actually increases creativity and productivity. So I like this mantra that routine sets you free. The main thing I wanted to do when I quit my job was to have no staff and no structure, because I was so pegged into that 9-to-5 cubicle slavery that I wanted to have nothing. But as I've built back routine and created habits around it, I've actually discovered this greater capacity to have relaxing time when things are taken care of automatically and they become habit. So that's that one quick daily meeting with my team makes me relax for the rest of the day, knowing that they're all focused on the thing that is best for the business that day. And having little checklists for, say when someone comes into Silver Circle, I've got a checklist to go through that takes care of business. It means I won't miss a single thing and that I'm able to easily find areas that we can focus on and not have to just wing it. And as a salesperson, I had a system as well. Even though it was a very simple system, on the back of my calculator, I had a telephone script so that when someone would call me for an inbound sales inquiry, all I had to do was turn my calculator over and I had my prompts there, which were the main six or seven things that I had to know to be able to sell a car. So relying on systems has actually been one of the major foundations for being able to build up everything that I've got.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, for me, it was, you know, it's something that I knew, and I even wrote about it back when I was, you know, starting my first business. And I think when I started my second business, which is based around my writing, I had a mindset shift, which was just back into the old routine of, oh, I just don't want to deal with, you know, the crap anymore. And so I'm going to jettison all that stuff. But now I've come back to the hard word one lesson again. It's maybe something similar to what your father said. Well, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing. And don't mess about with it. And so, you know, put your best energy into it. And for me, that means don't reinvent the wheel every time. Don't figure it out every time. Don't waste your willpower on simple stuff that you can make a list for. Do the same thing. Like, just as I said, when Ian calls me on Wednesday mornings to do the podcast, I pull up the podcast checklist and there's 25 items and we go through them every week. And then I can use all my great, my leftover willpower and decision-making energy to add to that, to work the system or to embellish it or to add a creative flair within that system. So, yeah. The way I actually have a mental framework for thinking about this, which is, especially for content creators, have a voracious input. So take in whatever you want. It's like kind of like the Atkins diet. Just eat as much as you want. Let yourself the longest leash possible. But when you create, hold your feet to the fire. Stick to a system. Stick to a legible way of producing content, and gradually shift that as your audience gives you feedback, rather than just doing whatever you want when you wake up in the morning. That'll kill your productivity and kill your creativity.
You're writing a book right now. I imagine this would be a handy thing for you to have on hand.
Yes. I have noticed that the book project has squandered a lot of good energy because I don't know what I'm doing. And I think, you know, I've tried to look for systems and guides, and I think it's just a cut your teeth kind of thing. And I also need to decide the kind of book that I want to write. Because this is a career change for me, definitely. Like, I'm thinking, based on my experience thus far, that I will try to produce, or I will produce, 2 books a year at 30,000 words. So, to give you an idea, a book like The 4-Hour Workweek is probably like 65,000 words or 70,000 words. So about half that size of a standard business book, and put them out, twice a year. And so have a more of a serialized right. kind of approach to high-end content. I was talking to a blogger friend who has, I'm not sure how many subscribers she has, but not too many, but she's got a small loyal audience, recently put out a legitimate ebook, 25,000 words, probably the kind of thing you could create in a month, and 20,000 downloads in the first weekend. So I do think that there's an opportunity for putting out premier content, the opportunity for that to get picked up by distribution channels that might not pick up stuff like podcasts and blog posts.
Yeah, I think a book is a great thing to have. And I'm in the same process of putting out a book, but I've taken a radically different approach. So it'd be interesting just to sort of benchmark the sort of two different ways to go about it, see what happens. And then my thing is, it doesn't matter which one's right or better. It just matters at the end to be able to analyze it all, figure out what the next thing that I should be doing is based on everything I've learned to that point.
Yes.
I do want to cover this other idea. Now, recently, I switched off my affiliate program. It happens at the end of the year, but I made the decision to integrate my marketing, to bring back control of my brand and to earn the follows and to earn the links from other people, which has been tremendously successful already in the last few weeks. And in no small part because of the support that your crowd have been doing. We did an interview, which was great. And a lot of the people in your related sphere have sort of picked up or given me some credit for the Own the Race course ideas and mm-hmm. given me raw links. And I have actually made sales from it. So firstly, a big thank you.
Sure.
Secondly, what are your sort of thoughts on this? I know you're quite passionate about authority market leadership. Can you give me sort of a window into the mind of Dan Andrews and where you see things going over the next year?
Yeah, I'm not sure how cohesive my thoughts are, and I don't have a super broad range of experience, but just as an observer, I noticed that and I'm not talking about the Bluehost or the Market Samurais or the larger products that are looking for distribution out there. I'm talking mostly about service providers and the information marketers in the middle who are seeking to get their products out to a broader audience. And, you know, to me, the best way to build a great business is to have great products, number one, and to have a passionate customer base. Like one of my favorite articles is 1,000 True Fans by Kevin Kelly. And I've written a follow-up on it called 100 True Customers, and I'm actually working on one called 10 True Clients. So this is going to be part of my book. But if you can please those 100 True Customers or 1,000 True Fans, they're going to do all the sales you need for them. And that would be the case between me and you. Of course, like, you've given me a lot of value, so I have no problem passing along great products to other people. And the problem with the affiliate tacking on, say, a 50% affiliate commission for people to pimp your product for you, which is pretty common, is that you're signaling that it's an inefficient product, that the distribution channel is incredibly expensive, and that you're asking your customers to foot the bill for you. And to me, this always seems so bold-faced and on the surface. And just because people aren't writing blog posts about it doesn't mean people aren't thinking this. And I think that's, you know, because of course the internet marketing dogma is just, you know, slap an affiliate program on. Of course, you know, incentivize people to go pimp your product. That's going to make it better. I never felt that way when I looked at the internet, when I looked at these products and thought, well, this guy's charging $500 for it, but I know, why did this person put it on their blog if they're not getting paid $250 for it? So now I'm being forced to pay an extra $250 for this product because I read about it on this blog. That can't be good for the long-term sustainability of this product. And in the niches that I've followed, there has been no such thing as long-term sustainability, except when it comes to products that have reached some sort of scale. And I think your products would have been a notable exception, as well as the scaled service products like Bluehost and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's kind of the general idea. But I'm actually more curious to see how my philosophical wankerdom sort of played out in your real-life case.
We both have a mutual friend, Dan Norris. The first I became aware of him was I got a Google alert for my product Traffic Grab. I went and looked at the YouTube video review of my product, and lo and behold, He was reviewing it for his customers, recommending they buy it, and he was not an affiliate and had no intention of becoming an affiliate. And this was quite unusual. Later on, he joined my community, and he's also in your community, and he's interviewed me, and you've interviewed me, and then he's one of the influencers, I guess. He's a guy that said, hey, you should have a look at this, and yep. He also recommends me other people, in which case I've usually sort of just been there or just about to get there myself. But that whole philosophy was good. But what you articulated with the inefficient marketing system, it hit the nail on the head for me, because with those $2,000 products, I actually found it somewhat disgusting that they would just pay $1,000 to someone else to promote it, as you say, pimp it. Back early on in my affiliate marketing, that was the thing to do. It was to sell those products with the whole product launch formula thing. But I quickly discovered that it wasn't good for people to have those products, and that then, you know, as videos emerged of how they really feel about their affiliates, and they're classifying them as their A-level and B-level affiliates, and then how systemized it was to just go around and around and around. I call it a circle jerk, but anyway, where they share those customers, the only people prospering are the ones in the very first ring, and everyone else is really just a bottom feeder or a victim in some ways, aside from the fact that people can make up their own mind to buy or to not buy. The only saving grace in my case was that I always gave people a bonus, and in some cases the bonus was me helping them on their business, like personal coaching or things that would assist them get a really good result. So I felt good about that side of it, but I felt bad about the actual product itself until a few years ago I decided not to promote Guru products anymore. And just thought, you know what, I can do a better job of this myself. And I just created my own products, and I went to the market with a fair value approach. And the overwhelming feedback I had from products like Traffic Grab, which I sold for $79, were that that was a $2,000 product sold for $79. And it really was a big single finger pointed up at those guys who were ripping people off. And that product sold thousands of copies and formed the foundation for the community that I have now. And it also, interestingly, propelled my Done For You services business, which, as you've also identified, you know, there's this huge need for people who should not be doing it themselves, who aren't suited to running a team, who might know how to do it, but just really need someone just to supply it for them. That business has powered along too in the last year or two. So I guess, from my own point of view, the thing you mentioned about inefficient distribution was the most resonating point. And the second thing is the support from your own community, guys like the AdSense Flippers, guys like Dan Norris and Tim Connolly. You know, they've all come from that same sort of environment, and that's the support that I guess I needed for that last step. But over the last 2 years, I'd weaned my affiliate percentage of turnover from 25% to 15% to 5%, because I've got a very efficient marketing distribution arm with my own team. My team are traffic specialists. They build high converting websites and they can rank anything. So that's been our own, growth. And in the end, the people who squish my face around into the wrong proportions and misrepresent my brand, or even worse, just pass off as me, just scraping people and adding no value, that really got under my skin, to the point where when I finally had a bit of affiliate fraud happening in while I was away, then that was it, end of story. And I don't think I'm likely to revisit that affiliate program in the immediate future.
Well, you know, James, really, this conceptually could be a 5-hour discussion. The affiliate model, especially the $2,000, with $1,000 worth of gravy on top, is really more suited to selling opportunities than it is to selling sort of specific solutions. And so the problem with opportunities is this incredible amount of frontage. So they're sort of for anybody. And they're kind of at any time. And that's why people that are in the opportunity space are quizzically constantly launching sort of the same thing over and again, Well, because it's they're not really doing anything much different, you know. So I think I have this article that you might find fascinating. It's called The Anatomy of the Internet Marketing Gold Rush. And I think part of the reason that I latch on to what you're doing and to what the AdSense flippers are doing is that I see you guys as manifestations of the fourth generation of internet marketing. And so I basically list out a bunch of examples of stuff, of ways, of differentiators between these generations. So that might be a cool little thing to link up to in this podcast.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that. I have read it, and I really enjoyed that. It was part of the idea formation behind it. I agree about the opportunity, guys. And a lot of them come to me privately and ask me to help them fix their broken business because they've become launch dependent. And I saw that as a, I was in Mercedes-Benz, a really interesting thing happened. Mercedes-Benz came to Australia in the 1960s and set up a distribution which was run by the factory. And then about six or seven years ago, this guy ran a sale, and we'd never run sales, and there was always high value in the marketplace, and there was no discounts on Mercedes-Benz, and it wasn't expected, and that's just how it ran. But this guy did a big discount sale, and I believe that was when the whole market was finished from then on. I see sales all the time in the marketing, and it makes me a bit sad, but they became promotion dependent, and it just trains buyers to hold back and wait for the big sale. And so that's one aspect of it. Secondly, it takes the whole focus off value. And I think people should be building real businesses, and a promotion is just a spike. It shouldn't be the whole business. And
yes,
I had this lady come to me during the week. She spent tens of thousands over the last year or two, not made a single dollar back. And she was looking to get SEO for a MLM company that she just joined last month, and she pretty much wanted a guarantee of results and that I would finally be able to get her some money back. And this is the scariest part for me. She denied that this thing was even an MLM company. I said, with this MLM stuff, you really want to consider if this is the path you want to go down. And she said, no, it's not an MLM company. I said, well, it is an MLM company. She goes, no, this is affiliate marketing. So they've even gotten so sneaky, sure, in this particular company to push the whole focus away from it. But this lady had zero business experience, and it's kind of sad to think with all these launches, they only work because there are so many people out there who just keep loading up their credit card and buying the crap.
Yes, and those people aren't great customers either. I mean, there's always been this dogma that, the beginners and these, I think it's all BS. This is they're selling to affiliates. They're not selling to customers. They're trying to convince people to put up affiliate websites. It's all crap. And this is what I call it. This is like Microsoft dead, right? It's like, it's fine. It worked for them in 2007. It's not going to work for people looking for opportunities now. And here's the thing. I think that a launch is like the internet version of a billboard or a Super Bowl ad. I mean, traditionally these things have sort of worked and stuff, but I mean, I think if you have to do the big sale and scream loud about what's going on, that's a barometer that your product isn't working out. You've got a long-term sustainability issue. And so if you don't, if you're sitting around in your back office concocting sales, what you need to be doing is concocting stories and better products or better conceptions that are worthy of people's attention. That's a long-term strategy. Sitting back, figuring out clever ways to scream your product about your product is really a symptom that your business is heading downhill. Or it could be. I don't know the universal statement, but I think one of the things that you said to me, you gave the analogy of when you make an offer, it ought to be that you're just dropping it into a magnet into a sort of a bowl of metal shavings, and the ones that have the right qualities are going to stick to that offer, and then they're going to pull them right back out. And it doesn't need to be, especially in nowadays, this big loud screaming affair. So I mean, it's part of what attracts me to what you're doing, and I love the way Dan Norris sells and as well, because look, I get it. I'm a good customer. I just need a good product. I need a good solution. I don't need some big bonus in sale. And I mean, when you look at these people, like, and these people are coming out of the woodwork now. We know these people, the Brendan Tullys, the Dan Norrises. These people are the best customers because they are prepared to achieve ROI. They have real businesses, real cash flow. They have audiences and customers that they can share. You can do partnerships and work with them. These are the customers we're looking for, not the down and out last $2,000 guy. That'll be the last $2,000 they spend and the last $2,000 you get.
You know, that is so interesting because here's the kicker. When I've switched my focus off the affiliate program, I've switched it onto my reseller program, and I've had discussions with you about my beliefs that people should be focusing on building a real business, and the success of my business now rides on my ability to help other people create and build their own business where they have the customer relationship, where they build an asset they could sell, and where they have it efficient enough that they can keep a nice profit margin. And I see myself in the responsible position of being able to supply them high quality, sustainable, scalable, valuable services that they can build on top of. But it's no flash in the pan. It's not like I make money off the first order. They're very time and energy intensive in the beginning to train a reseller. And I know a lot of people happily charge $25,000 to share their license or their franchise system. In my case, I don't charge people to come and be a reseller, and I'm creating training materials for them now. I've already shot the first few videos and we've put together a resource page, but I'm banking my success on the fact that I can help these people create their own businesses and go out there and serve people and create value for them.
And again, you know, it's almost like the best answer is always duh, right? It's like when you were describing you know, how your sales process at Mercedes-Benz is, there's all these blowhards on the internet looking for content telling you about, you know, being a great salesman and stuff. And your strategy was to listen and to understand the customer and then to give them, the best product that they need. And this can be a doubly powerful and simple duh technique in the entrepreneur space, because I mean, when you empower an entrepreneur, you've set off a rocket. I mean, it's one thing to drop a Mercedes in a guy's lap and maybe he sells one to his cousin and his sister, but man, an entrepreneur, they could have thousands of customers, or they could have an incredible future ahead of them. I just look at, you know, James, some of the people that I've been hanging out with, a lot of us back in 2009 and 2008, we were, you know, just trying to pay the rent and just happy that we were able to travel and everything. And now we come to fly into these meetups in Bangkok and stay in nice hotels. And these guys have $1 million businesses. You know, and that happened in the span of 3 years. And so these are the people that if you can, and we talk about long-term relationships, well, you can keep a customer for 2 or 3 years. You know, you're talking about some incredible upside potential. So I love this model. I absolutely love the model and it goes down to the classic success maxim too. If you can bring enough success to other people, it's going to come to you too.
Yeah. I think that was Zig Ziglar thing.
That's it.
So I know we could talk for hours because we've liked to talk.
Is there anything useful I could say?
Everything you're saying, like, I'm just nodding my head. You know, this is fantastic. I've swiped your show note infrastructure. You know, Timbo with Freedom Ocean used to send me a Google Doc with the episode. He'd give me sort of a topic he'd want to talk about, but I wouldn't get to find out too much about it until just before the show. But I love this framework you've got. I will literally sit down with my reminders app and plug this framework in and work on making my show better. I'd love a closing exercise here. Maybe if we can have a look at your show note template.
Oh yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay, that's like when you put the checklist from Own the Race Course on your site. It probably helped a lot of people start creating that authority for themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's just post it on this blog post. How do we find this blog post? Search for Dan Andrews, James Shramko podcast, and it'll come up.
Well, let's do this. Let's do this exercise now. Let's go through the checklist,
okay,
and apply it to this particular episode. So our show notes for this episode were pretty simple. It's two guys talking and exchanging some ideas about podcasting and the shift in marketing authority from paid salesmen. That was sort of the basic plan 10 seconds before we went recording.
That's right.
How will we intro this show?
What? I'm confused.
How should we intro this show, this particular episode?
Ah, I see. So, I have no idea. You want me to try to make this show better?
Yeah, we're gonna run it through your template now. We're gonna fix it up, make it good.
I see.
This is like a workshop here.
I see. So, okay, well, if you have one of your ninjas come in and take the funniest line out of the show and drop it before the intro music, that would be a fun little preview.
Yep, okay.
And it implies too that there's something cool coming up. And then,
cool, got it.
Okay. When you introduce the episode, you could, if you have a standard introduction, you could preview something that they're gonna learn or that's gonna come up later on in the show. Something that they might not know about, something that has a sort of a mysterious or black box quality to it. If you notice a lot of our...
Is that the tease?
It could be the tease, right? Yeah, so, or you could, a lot of people will go back and after having interviewed me, then you do a quick intro. And one of the, just a small little pet peeve, yeah. If you intro somebody on a podcast, don't leave the intro portion of the interview in anymore. Just get right into it. Too much fluff in podcasts. No need for all that.
Yeah, I think so. I know one podcast that has no bumper, no intro. They just start talking.
It's awesome. I think intro music is the most overrated thing in podcasting. It's totally irrelevant. Nobody cares. Everybody knows it's you sitting there with a microphone. There's no illusion of professionalism. It's all BS. Just make sure, you know, everybody knows you have some corny ass headset on right now. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no, you might have a cool mic, but no, but you know what I mean? Like everybody knows we're just sitting around in our living rooms hanging out. So, you know, you're not kidding anybody with your fancy radio intros. So if that's holding you back from podcasting, don't let it hold you back. Turn on your iPhone, put up a decent USB mic and, start talking, you know, start talking the message. I think that's all it takes.
What about a joke?
You know, I don't think a joke's that important. It would depend on your personal taste. So
you guys played a trick on me the other day in your podcast with you sampled my voice and talked about how it made you want to pay more.
That's right. So I think, you know, my feeling about that is that I don't get a ton of feedback about stuff like that. I don't think people care that much. I think they think it's nice as long as it doesn't become a distraction. So, you know, don't get over. Sometimes Ian and I spend all this time trying to come up with a funny bit. And it's just like, man, we should really be focusing on doing some research. And I find that I'm always impressed by the seriousness of my audience. You know, even though I'm being a little bit of a jokester, people really care. I mean, they're trying to take their business forward, so they don't want to spend too much time with you mucking around. That said, I do think it would be cool for you to have a narrative section to your podcast. So I really want to know what's going on for James Schramko and your business. I mean, I showed up because here's the problem with interview format is it can become non sequitur. I mean, I'm like, oh, here's a random guy I called. Well, why'd you call him? Well, because I needed some content. Well, he's really smart at this thing. Okay, fine. Well, what's going on? I want to hear, like, what's going on with Fast Web Formula? Where are you? You know, when's the next Silver Circle going to open up? What are you thinking about doing with your affiliate program? Like, that to me is really fascinating. That's a narrative element that, and then when I get on that, you know, open up my podcast device, I get to see that, there's a new episode of Internet Marketing Speed. I'm curious, what's going to be happening? So I think that narrative element helps to string together the show and helps to keep people coming back and people to be involved.
Yeah, this is fantastic. And how important is it for shouting out to your listeners? I know you do that a lot, and I even commented on your podcast, which I very rarely would do.
Yes, you know, we have an incredible amount of user interaction, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, but we're actually just talking with our people. I think that's part of it. Is like, you know, we know who these people are. I always thought it was part of what the LBP came from was sort of a frustration with current podcasts. I mean, I felt like people were almost like willfully ignoring their audience in the effort to have a more professional show or maybe a more timeless show or all that kind of stuff. But I was really coming from a more of a radio background. I mean, I love shows. If you listen to famous content producers like Adam Carolla and again, this is the game that we're in, right? We're the Howard Sterns. We're the next generation of Howard Sterns, but more focused. And there was always this element of narrative, like, what's the engineer doing? What's Baba Booey doing? What's Robin doing? That was a big part of the show. Same deal with, you look at the Adam Carolla podcast, just sold 10,000 bottles of Mangria, which is this new alcoholic beverage. And see, I know about this stuff. I can tell you about this because I'm following the narrative. And I actually just sent him one of my portable bars with custom printing on the side. It's a $2,500 marketing stunt. So I don't know if you know, but I make portable bars for a living. And I also...
I know because of the narrative. And I know you make pet furniture.
And I also make keyboards.
And I know you've got... events all around the world next year, Europe and Asia. And
this is funny because, you know, I gave this presentation at my Bangkok meetup, and one of the stunts I pulled during the presentation was I gave a complete sales pitch for Rob Walling's Hit Tale. And the point was is that because Rob had given it to me in the form of a narrative, I had no defense mechanism against hearing the pitch for Hit Tale. But I understand deeply what this product does and how it can benefit people. So, I mean, if that isn't a sales pitch for the narrative format and for the podcast format, I don't know what is. I mean, I can sell you James's products. I can sell you Rob Walling's products. And who better to equip, you know, with that ability than, you know, fellow entrepreneurs and, you know, people that are big fans of yours. So it's.
Well, I think in my case, my Superfast Business channel is only me. And it's a way for all of my customers and prospects to find out about all parts of my business, which I do podcast. And interestingly, I still get more downloads from the audio than I do from the video views. So I might get 500 or 600 video views per mm-hmm. episode, which is not many, but it's high frequency. But I get more downloads. I've just cracked, 1,100 or 1,200 downloads a day on iTunes from my various shows.
Yeah, from my perspective, I'd even say that when someone downloads my audio onto their device, that's like them giving me their mailing address. That's a much more
especially if they synchronize it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to so much trouble and effort, and then the crowning achievement at the end of the day, they're actually listening to me speak into their ears for long periods of time. So this is a marketer's dream is the cynical way to look at it, but it's also a true revolution. It's absolutely fantastic that I don't have to watch the Oprah Winfrey Show or The Price is Right or whatever crap is on TV in the morning, that I can listen to James Schramko, a guy who's years ahead of me in terms of experience and success, and I can learn directly from you, and it's entertaining, and I get to follow your story, and it's an absolute revolution. And so to be a part of it in and of itself is the more less cynical answer, which is just, it's an amazing thing to be a part of.
That's like my Burger Friday. It's got the lifestyle business podcasting session as well. Like if you didn't put an episode out, I think you'd have a backlash. How have you stayed so focused with your regular weekly? Do you just have a set time no matter where you are? Is that how it works?
Part of it is that we do it, just like you were saying with your speeches, we do it just in time. We do it at the last minute every week. And we publish at 8 p.m. Asia time on Thursday evening. So it's Thursday morning Eastern Standard. And we selected that time because not because it was strategic in terms of launching, but because it was the time that we felt most likely to be able to succeed at every week. And since we made that mantra, I think we've messed up once, and there was a backlash, actually, or a lot of friendly notes, people saying, what's going on, are you okay? But it's really been important for us to stick to that schedule, not only for our audience. There's this expectation, people actually do wake up, and there's a not everybody is just constantly connected to the internet. Those timing signals in their life are important. They go to iTunes on Thursday mornings in order to get the program. It also adds sort of a more of a communal element. I tell my team they do weekly reports, and even if they write the reports early, I have them deliver the reports at 5 p.m. on Friday so that it pulls the whole team together at a certain moment in time. And same thing with having a publishing schedule for your blog. People can expect that content, but more important than that is that it forces you to produce, and that's the name of the game. And if I didn't have that publishing deadline, every other lifestyle business podcast wouldn't go out. because I'd feel stupid and ashamed and have that sort of sixth, you know, feeling in my stomach, like, did I say something stupid? Am I wrong about some of this stuff? And, you know, I can cut the suspense. Yes, I did say something stupid. And yes, I am wrong about some of this. And, you know, it's fine. I got to get it out because I've made that commitment Thursday morning. So that's been the most important part.
Yeah, I know. If I don't make a video every day or two, I start getting like twitchy. I've got to film something. It's become so, because I've been doing it for, I don't know, it's more than 6 months now, over 100 and something videos. And it's, you just get into that routine and I'm happy with that. I'm cranking up Freedomotion a little more. You'll be pleased to know we've just got an agreement to do that weekly, which is awesome.
Yes.
Because I'm ready to roll.
It's a great format.
And of course, this one we're on now is Internet Marketing Speed, where I have my feature discussions, and it's got a good frequency happening as well now. So spinning three plates, each one has a slightly different audience, but hopefully they all they find each of them. And I hope they all go and check out lifestylebusinesspodcast.com. That's for you, Ian.
Lifestyle Business Podcast. The unfortunately name.
Right. Okay, so give us a final inspirational aha, big tip, something that listeners can take action on today. They've listened to us ramble for a little while now. What's the big conclusion? How do we finish this one on a high?
All right, I'll say this. You know, this is something that I've been working on a little bit, is this idea of ready, fire, aim, and how important that is when it comes to content generation. So I call this the Action Jackson philosophy. And just like I was saying with my podcast every Thursday morning, I mean, it's not easy. Sometimes Ian and I are generally on the other side of the world. Sometimes I got to stay up to like 12:30 in the morning to do it. You know, I'm not crying about it, but sometimes it's tough. But now I've gotten in that routine where it's my favorite hour every week. And at the beginning, it was really just an arbitrary decision to do it. And that's this idea of ready, fire, aim, and Action Jackson. If you believe that content marketing can be great for your business, of course it can be. Stop thinking about it. Stop overanalyzing. Just have a simple format and have a simple timing frequency and just do it for 8 weeks. Do it for 8 weeks and don't think about it. You're going to feel stupid. I will cut all the suspense for you. Feel stupid. You'll feel humiliated. People are going to hate you. You know, your mother's going to call you and tell you, what the hell are you doing? All this kind of stuff's going to happen. It's going to be awful. But 8 weeks later, sit down and take stock and ask yourself, is it working? Can you improve it? And how? And that's it. You don't have to think about this stuff too much. If you do, it will be the disaster to your creativity. So that's the other element. On the front end of the episode, we talked about how structure can give you creativity. And on the back end, I think once you put that structure in place, you have to consider it arbitrary and just deliver on it. And that's the way that you're going to get the good information. You're not going to get great information on your content by overanalyzing it in your mind. You're going to get good information by putting it out there and seeing the data, hearing it from other experts, and refining it as you go along. By the way, if you want to get an idea of how this can work, just go back and listen to episode number one of the Lifestyle Business Podcast. It is awful. It's awful. It's absolutely, it's fantastically awful. And it's worth listening to, because that's how you get started. And you just keep going.
I've heard this reference by Dan Norris before, and I'm quite curious. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that. And I'll see if I can find something that I've produced that's crappy as well. You don't have to look very far. My first video update, I think, was to FastWeb Formula members, and it was dreadful as well. The sound quality, you know, it's just when you go to video and audio and lighting, you just add in all these extra dimensions of difficulty. But I can say it's worth chipping away at. If I finally, probably only in the last week, have I got to a production level that I'm happy with sound, lighting, lenses, and B-rolls, and music, and it just takes a while, but it's so worth doing. You just get those, you get traction in your community. It powers your business, and you also move ahead of everyone who's just happy to slap out a few hundred words on a blog post. You just move miles ahead when you go into more rich media.
That's it. And also worth a Googling of the equal odds theory, which is the idea that those who put out the best content also tend to put out the worst content. So it can be a volume game. So it can be an interesting mindset shift to take a look at things like that and to try to disassociate your feeling or your ego from how your content is received, or how you think your content is going to be received, because that can just be poisonous to your creativity.
Love it. That is awesome. And as a tribute to the Lifestyle Business Podcast, I'm going to see out this episode with a music track. What do you think about that idea?
Fantastic.
We're going to be listening to Karma's Relent, their new unmastered track called Unbound.
Good for them. Aren't they lucky? And I would love to hear, by the way, while this music is playing in the background, I would love to hear an artist complain about the fact that their music is being appreciated and shared on a podcast as elegant and as notable as this, you know? Let's just, I can't wait. The nerve of an artist who's going to raise a stink or a record label. I mean, what a great marketing opportunity, by the way. I can't wait till some record label sends me an email. Bring it on. I can't wait.
Thanks, Dan.
Cheers, Dan.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.
I'm not a lawyer, by the way.